Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A salute to farmers on a very significant day in labor union history. Meanwhile, grocery workers vote to strike in California. AFGE members march in Washington. And today on the show, it's LIUNA in New York State and the Georgia AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Thursday, March 31st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on a growing number of platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Glenn Merrick is going to be our first guest on the show. He is president and assistant business manager of Labor's Local 157. Labor's157.org is their website, and he is just another guest on behalf of our presenting sponsor, LIUNA. LIUNA, Labor's International Union of North America, presenting sponsor of America's Workforce. Glenn covers five New York counties based out of Schenectady, New York. Their mission, building communities, building New York State. A little background on Glenn. He started as a general heavy-duty laborer, was able to work his way up to general superintendent while working for the union. He held several positions. That includes organizer, lead organizer, field rep, and now assistant business manager. He also sat on the board of trustees for Labor's Local 157 pension, welfare, and annuity funds. He's had that since 2009. And he is the current president of the board of trustees of the Eastern New York Labor's Training Center. So we'll talk about his local. Again, labors157.org, a little bit of history as far as the workload, and obviously New York State, pretty pro-union state, getting ready for a lot of infrastructure money due to the bipartisan infrastructure legislation that has been signed into law. Charlie Fleming will be joining us later in the show, and he comes to us from the Georgia AFL-CIO, and ever since the 2020 election, all eyes have been on Georgia. And boy, I tell you, they've got some big elections coming up. This is a state, it was a red state. It turned blue. And the legislature there is trying to take it back red. We're going to talk about that. A little background on Charlie. He was actually born in New York, moved with his family to Atlanta back in 1966. He attended Huntington College. That's in Montgomery, Alabama, on a basketball scholarship. Started his career in aviation in 1973 and spent over 30 years in the airline business. In 1979, Charlie joined the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and he served his local lodge, that would be 2665, in various leadership positions, including three terms as president. He is now a proud 43-year member of the IAM. Was elected president of the Atlanta North Georgia Council in 2000, where he served for 11 years. In 2006, Charlie founded a nonprofit organization called Georgia Stand Up, an alliance of community, faith, and labor that promotes smart growth strategies and economic justice through research, education, and advocacy. He was elected president of the Georgia State AFL-CIO in October of 2011, when he was elected at the organization's 51st state convention, and he received the Georgia AFL-CIO Labor Leader of the Year. That was in 2010. His favorite quote, and I love this, "Live so that your children can tell their children that you not only stood for something, but you acted on it." That's a guy that belongs on this show, don't you think? Charlie Fleming, president of the Georgia AFL-CIO. And I'll tell you, that is one state to watch. Oh, my God, is that one state to watch. All right, today is a very significant day, and it's also a very significant week. This week is National Farm Worker Awareness Week, which culminates today. Cesar Chavez Day is today, March 31st.
Today, we remember and honor the memory and legacy of Cesar Chavez because today is Cesar Chavez Day. It's observed every year on March 31st in the United States. He became active with the Community Service Organization, which helped fight racial and economic discrimination against Chicano residents. Chavez co-founded the National Farm Workers Association in the early 1960s. He focused on the plight of migrant farm workers and gained support to have his organization be the first successful farm workers union in the United States. We spoke with Dolores Huerta about the importance of it during these times.
So I think it's very timely that Cesar's birthday, came at this important time in our lives to remind us, who the farm workers are and what they do for us.
Dolores Huerta says they want to continue to carry on his legacy by supporting and fighting for rights of farm workers. Governor Gavin Newsom also taking some time today during his news briefing to pay respect to the leadership of Cesar Chavez, calling him one of the great leaders of California.
No doubt about that. And a year ago, President Biden issued a proclamation on this day. And this is what he said. In his time, Cesar Chavez witnessed a booming economy that served those at the top, but left millions of hardworking Americans behind. And he earned an enduring place in history by standing strong for the rights and dignity of the working people who built and sustained our nation. Now, Chavez died in 1993. Had he lived, he would be 95 today. Biden went on to say he fasted, he marched, he organized, he stayed true to his convictions and brought hope to millions for whom hope has often seemed too far away. And just to back up what he said, Biden, when he became president, placed a bust of Cesar Chavez in the Oval Office so that no one, he said, who enters this historic room may forget the powerful truths his farm worker hands imparted. Now, the head of the Farm Labor Organizing Committee is Baltimore Velasquez. We've had Baltimore on the show a couple of times, and this was his statement released for today. Sad that historic abuses to the farm workers of the U.S. continue, but out of that suffering, workers and their allies across the nation are organizing and blazing trails that have not existed, calling for change. Farm workers in America have a long history of standing together and winning campaigns that lead to better outcomes at work, carrying on the proud legacy of farm workers like Cesar Chavez. The Farm Labor Organizing Committee, better known as FLOC, is continuing its fight to root out abuse and exploitation across the nation, ranging from Ohio to Kentucky to Virginia and North Carolina's tobacco industry. Interesting to note, too, the Labor Department is recognizing today and National Farm Workers Week. And this is a statement from the Wage and Hour Division Director, Jessica Luman. National Farm Worker Awareness Week should remind all of us of the essential role these workers play in feeding us, our families, and our communities. It also serves to inspire us to expand our outreach and strengthen our enforcement efforts to ensure all agricultural workers receive the wages they are due. And get this, last year, fiscal year 2021, the Labor Department recovered $8.4 million in back wages for more than 10,300 agricultural employees. And on top of that, they assessed employers with more than $7.3 million in civil monetary penalties. Hats off to the Labor Department doing their job, I might add. Approximately 47,000 grocery store workers in Central and Southern California have voted to authorize a strike Should bargaining with employers break down again after talks resume this week? A three-year contract covering hundreds of Ralph's, Albertsons, Vons, and Pavilion stores expired earlier this month on March 6. Forbes magazine is reporting that the workers are calling for a $5 an hour raise over 3 years. You know what they're offering? $1.80 over 3 years. So what's that, 60 cents a year? 75% of Kroger workers report struggling to feed their families. And this comes at a time when the company raked in a record $4 billion profit. And the CEO made $20 million. They're also calling for better schedules for part-time workers and safer conditions in the midst of the pandemic, which actually has killed hundreds of grocery workers. In the meantime, about 350 Conde Nast employees are requesting that the publishing giant voluntarily recognize a union that would cover about 500 editorial and production video workers. It follows the successful voluntary recognition campaign waged recently by employees at The New Yorker. Now, both groups of employees have emphasized that the prestige associated with these jobs does not make up for the long hours, the culture of burnout, and meager pay. A lot of the employees who are promoting the union have called for greater job security, better pay, and more transparency about salary and diversity. Yeah, this is a real prestigious organization, publication, I should say. And I think they're banking on that, figuring, well, you know, this is a great place to work. You don't need all that money, right? On Tuesday of this week, hundreds of members of the American Federation of Government Employees held a march in Washington that ended with a rally on Capitol Hill. The action took place as the Union of Federal Employees met for its annual legislative conference to spell out its priorities for the year, including pay raises, full rights and pay for Transportation Security Administration workers, and preventing the closure of Veterans Affairs hospitals, among others. We've talked about that on the show quite extensively. With one voice, AFGE members said, "We are union. We fight for workers' rights." All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to New York. Going to check in with LIUNA Local 157.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment. Good employment, I might add. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to Schenectady, New York right now. And joining us on our live line is Mr. Glenn Merrick. And Glenn is president and assistant business manager of Labor's Local 157. Website is labors157.org. Again, this is a continuation of checking in to various LIUNA locals on behalf of our presenting sponsor, and that would be LIUNA National, LIUNA.org. General President, Mr. Terry O'Sullivan, great guy and a great supporter of America's workforce. Hey, Glenn Merrick, welcome to the show. How are we doing today, my brother?
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me.
Real good. And talk to me a little bit about yourself. You were telling me before we joined the podcast here that you joined almost, 20 years ago, 2003? Is that right?
Absolutely. Coming up on 20 years and proud of every moment I've been in.
Okay, well, talk to me about that part. I mean, what kind of attracted you to the union way of things? Go ahead.
So I bounced around for a few years after high school and did some construction work and got in some other industries, and I was always drawn to construction. And being from a union family, from varying trades, it just seemed the right path. And the opportunity came for me to join the laborers. And it's been great ever since. Started off literally shoveling and sweeping sidewalks.
Really?
And through the course of almost 20 years, I've managed to be a superintendent on some rather large projects, $150 million tunnel project. And then the opportunity came for me to do some good for the union itself, and I jumped at it.
I see you've worked several positions, including organizer, lead organizer, field rep, and now the position that you have as assistant business manager and president of the local. So you just went right up the ladder here. As far as the number in your local, you said, what is it, a little over 500, 550, is that right?
Yeah, just under 550. Somewhere, it changes all the time, but it's somewhere between 515 and 550 in that range.
And the counties, you serve around Schenectady, New York, which is not too far from the capital of Albany. I guess that's good, and it could be bad at times. Maybe you could talk about your territory.
We're a fairly rural local, Schenectady being the biggest city in it. We also have the city of Saratoga, which anybody that's been in New York in 6 weeks of summer understands that Saratoga is the place to be. So we're fortunate there. But other than that, Fulton, Montgomery County, Schoharie County, big rural areas, formerly the breadbasket of the revolution, as they said.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a varying demographic that we have and geographical area that we cover.
I gotcha. How's the work been? And maybe you could talk about, we're still in the pandemic, and I know the trades were essential during the pandemic. How'd you work your way through through COVID and all that? Was that had to be kind of difficult for you?
It was very difficult because every day you didn't know what you were going to face, what new rule and restriction, and with the different owner mandates as well as the state laws and the county laws, it was very tough to negotiate, and we felt for our contractors at that point as well because we just couldn't figure out how you could schedule anything. We managed to make it through fairly well. Our employment percentage stayed high. As you said, we were, luckily granted the essential worker status, so we were able to stay working on most projects. A few of them did shut down, but it didn't. If somebody wanted to go to work, the opportunity presented itself.
Do you feel now we're almost back to normal? How would you gauge it right now, Glenn?
As far as the workload, I would say we're back to normal plus. The workload looks tremendous for this year. We have some huge projects coming out with the solar energy and the green energy that New York is pushing strong in. LIUNA is very very much involved in all that, and we're doing extraordinarily well with it, and we look forward to a very busy next few years.
Well, let's talk about that, because that seems to be growing in a number of states, including red states as well. In fact, we talked to one of your brothers yesterday in Texas, and they've got some challenges. He's in Austin, which is kind of funny because it's like the blue dot in a sea of red over there. A little bit different in New York, but your legislature seems to be pretty proactive when it comes to alternative forms of energy. Can you speak to that, Glenn?
So we were lucky to get in on the ground floor of the Laborers International, and they're very, very aggressive as far as some of their timelines and what they're looking at doing with the renewables. Wind power, solar is tremendous at this point. As I said, we're in some rural counties, so there's a lot of open fields that at one time were used for hay or pasture land that now look to be set up pretty well for solar. So the solar contractors are taking advantage of that. And we have some huge projects, by our scale, huge projects going on or slated to go on in our area. 500 plus acres of panels, which, like I said, we're fortunate to be part of that.
So these are union contractors then, and I bring that up because a lot of these contractors that come in with solar panels, they're not union. Are you having a difficulty with any of that over in New York?
Well, again, we were fortunate that the state mandated anything over 5 megawatts has to be prevailing rate in New York.
And okay.
My understanding is that anything over 1 is going to be in after January. So that really levels the playing field as far as wage rates. That way it's the same for a union versus a non-union contractor. And with our lobbying efforts, the contractors see the advantage of that, and we're able to mobilize members for town board meetings and that kind of thing to try to help push some of these projects through to get our members working.
Well, as president and assistant business manager of a local, like a Liuna local that you are, does that occupy a lot of your time when it comes to lobbying? And you're close to the capital. You're only about 10 miles outside of Albany. Are you? Do you spend a lot of time over there making sure that things are done the right way, the union right?
To be honest with you, we like to leave Albany to the professionals. we deal with our local politicians and our local assemblymen and senators. We deal with them, certainly. But when it comes to going to Albany, we go there a couple of times a year for lobby days and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But again, we leave that to the professionals. That's a different animal than we're used to.
I hear you. What about your apprenticeship programs? I know that one was pretty difficult going through the pandemic because I know some of those had to go virtual. Where do we stand right now with your apprenticeship program, Glenn?
So we try to push the apprentice program as much as we can, trying to get some of the youth into the trades, specifically with the laborers. And with the current labor shortage, it's definitely tough. Everybody's competing for the same kids or people, whether it's a warehouse, whether it's distribution, whether it's the food service industry, retail, other trades, non-union, open shop contractors. We're all competing for the same people. So we think we have a great package to offer and a great future to offer. So we really try to push out. We try to push the long-range plan, not so much the short range. Mm-hmm. We stress our benefit package and our annuity, our pensions. We're fortunate to be very solid in our pension, which is a great puts us in a great position. So that's really what we try to stress. For instance, yesterday we were at a career fair at a BOCES in Schoharie County. We managed to get 75 applications from kids that are either graduating this year or next.
That's pretty
good. To try to
get
them. And we like to do almost a direct placement. You come out of the BOCES, and we have several programs in the area. You come out of BOCES, you're already trained in some of the things that we would train you in anyhow. You come out with your OSHA, and they come out with some dig safe qualifications. So that's only a benefit to the contractors and the future members, the apprentices. So
now,
we really try to work with them.
Are you like referencing like a vocational school, career school? Is this something that's part of the high school curriculum that you're talking about?
Yes, I'm sorry. So the BOCES here in upstate New York is like an addition to your high school. So the kids go to traditional school for maybe half a day, and they'll take their English and their social studies. But then the other half, whether it's the second half or the first half, depending on the year, they'll go and they'll get some technical training. There's construction technology, there's heating and cooling, there's auto mechanics, hairstyling, culinary arts. So they go to these vocational schools and learn that to prepare them for the workforce or mm-hmm. further education.
I see. So it kind of primes them for something that they might want to pick up in the trades in an apprenticeship program. That's good. Good to hear. And you got 75 applications. Let me ask you this. You know, you mentioned like pensions and wages, annuities and all that stuff. Good stuff. And you know, the older you get, the more you appreciate that. You know where I'm going, Glenn. Do young people today understand that? I have to ask you that question because sometimes it takes a couple of years for that to sink in. What's your answer?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But we try to educate them on that as well. And if their parents have any questions, we encourage their parents to call us and ask as well. We have some great handouts that provide the information, and we ask that they take them home to their parents and show them what we're offering. If their parents would like to have it, sit down with us and discuss what they're looking at and signing up for our apprentice program, we're happy to do so.
Yeah.
And again, we try to stress the long-term play. The way our pension is set up, if we can get somebody in the apprentice program at 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, they can retire with a full pension at 55. With 30 years and out, as long as you're 55 uh-huh. years old. We try to stress that to them. We're like, look at your parents at 55 or your grandparents at 55 or whomever, your neighbor.
Yeah.
Those opportunities aren't there like they used to be to retire.
Right. Yeah, that's a young age today. 55 and you're retired with benefits? Hey, that's the way to go. No doubt about that.
It's a rarity now.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I hear you. People are working longer now. And with inflation, I get that. I understand that. I want to talk about infrastructure. And you know that the money, I hear in some parts, is starting to trickle in. I know money's going to transit. New York, great union density. You're close to the capital. You've got to be kind of excited about what's going to happen here. I mean, broadband, bridges, roads, water systems. I mean, it's just, there's so many opportunities here. I'm just wondering, I'm sure you've been part of the conversation of what you're going to need when it comes to growing the union. What's the outlook right now, Glenn? I mean, you've got to be prepared for this, right?
The sky's the limit here. We were just saying yesterday, it's the golden age for construction workers right now. The sky's the limit. The workload is tremendous. Between the infrastructure package and some large projects that we have in the area, ongoing work, the solar, the renewable energy, it's all there for the taking at this point. And like you said, we have to try to capture those hours and get that work. So we need people to do so. Everybody has to understand that in upstate New York, our winters seem to go on for about 13 months sometimes. it's difficult sometimes to work through the winter.
Yeah.
But, our average member is anywhere from 1,400 to 1,600 hours a year that they're working. That's average workers. We have several that are 2,000 plus.
Yeah.
But the living that you can make in that 1,500 hours is great for the year, and it's providing your benefits for your family. And again, that's what the defined benefit pension. This is all stuff that we use to try to attract these people.
I hear you on the weather. I mean, I'm a lifelong Cleveland, Ohio guy, and we get our share of winter weather. We have an area here called the Snow Belt, and it's very similar to what happens in Buffalo. And you can get 2-3 feet of snow in no time. And yes, the winters, although the winter kind of started late this year, but it's been brutal on some of the days. So I get that. It's tough. It's really tough, especially for the trades to be working outside. But it sounds like you got your finger on the pulse over there. 550 members. You see that? Do you have any idea where that may be in a year or two, especially with all this money coming in from the federal government?
I could only dream. If all the work comes as they say it's going to come, for example, there's a big power line coming out of Canada running to New York, and most of it's underwater. They're going to run down Lake Champlain and into the Hudson, but a large section in our area is out of the water and has to be buried. Just that project alone, they're looking at like 300 laborers from three locals.
Wow.
The solar farms are eating up a tremendous amount of people. So I hate to put a number on where I think we're going to be. I know what we look like. I mean, we could probably use an additional 100 members a year for the next few years if all the work shakes out the way that it looks like it should.
Amazing. Great opportunity out there. Well, Glenn, I'm going to leave it on that note. Glenn Merrick, who is the president and assistant business manager of Labor's Local 157 out of Schenectady, New York. They cover five counties there. Their mission statement is building communities, building New York State. And I'll tell you, you're part of a great family, LIUNA. We have Terry O'Sullivan on the show many, many times, general president. Nationally, they're looking at well over 500,000 members. They're the presenting sponsor of the show. So keep in touch with us. And as Terry says, feel the power. Okay, Glenn?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for the chance. And I just want to say that Terry is a great national leader. He and Mr. Sabatoni, our general secretary treasurer, do fantastic things for us on a national level.
Amen, brother. Labors157.org for more information. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Charlie Fleming, who heads the Georgia AFL-CIO.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we are available on at least six platforms now. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings. Once again, I want to give a plug here to the Alliance for American Manufacturing, the most recent sponsor that joined the team of sponsors here at America's Workforce, and been getting these emails from Scott Paul, their executive director. And it's kind of a call to action. It's called the Bipartisan Innovation Act, which would strengthen our critical industries by investing in reshoring supply chains and boosting U.S. production for things like semiconductors. We have a problem with those chips right now. Let's make them in America. So go to AmericanManufacturing.org, AmericanManufacturing.org, and petition our Congress to get this job done, the bipartisan, keyword, Bipartisan Innovation Act. All right, let's go to Georgia right now. Joining us on our live line right now from Atlanta is Charlie Fleming. And Charlie is president of the Georgia State AFL-CIO. He's had that position since October of 2011. And he started his career in aviation going back to 1973, spent 30 years in the airline business, and is a proud card-carrying member of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Hey, Charlie Fleming, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today, my brother.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
And when I talk about the machinists, you know who comes to mind? Tommy Buffenbarger. I'm sure you know Tommy pretty well over the years, right?
Yes, I do. President Buffenbarger was a mentor and somebody that I looked up to, and somebody that certainly has helped me quite a bit in my career. Especially when I first became president of the Atlanta Labor Council back in 2000, we had some struggles as a council, and Tom stepped in more than once to help us out, and the machinists did likewise. So I have a special place for the machinists in my heart. I've been a proud member now for 43 years. They've treated me terrifically over the years, and I've been able to provide for my families mainly because of the contracts that we were able to get to negotiate with the machinist union in the airline industry for a long time.
Oh, yeah, and he had a really good team to put that all together. Yeah, Tom told me, and he still contributes to the show as our independent labor voice, and a great guy, longtime supporter. And I think he just got maybe about 6 to 8 months ago his 50-year pin. So great labor supporter, Tom Buffenbarger. Well, let's talk about Georgia. Boy, Georgia's been on the map ever since the 2020 election. And I see now Stacey Abrams is making another run for governor. You got a lot going on in your state there, Charlie. I would imagine there's never a dull moment there, is there?
No, that's for sure. There's never a dull moment, but you know, this is it's exciting. Georgia's been on the move now for several years, quite honestly, and everybody looks back to the 2020 election cycle where we were able to deliver Biden's victory in Georgia, and then you know win those two Senate races, U.S. Senate races. But this has been going on now for a decade. I'm very proud of the fact that our state Fed has, at least since myself and our Secretary Treasurer Yvonne Brooks, we have not gained seats in our state House or Senate in the decade leading up to 2020, and we. I kept telling, God rest his soul, President Richard Trumka on our calls during that election cycle. I said, we're going to be like Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, when he shocked the world and beat Sonny Liston. I said, we're going to do it. And by golly, we did. So it's been pretty exciting. It really has. It's a lot of work. We got a lot of help. I'd be the first to admit that, especially on those Senate races, it was the only game in town, really, because Everything else had been settled. So we got a lot of help from the entire labor movement, and a lot of nonprofits were in there, community groups trying to get the vote out, and, you know, it paid off, all that work.
You know, let's talk about that. You mentioned the nonprofits, and I was reading your bio earlier in the show back in 2006. You founded a nonprofit organization, Georgia Stand Up, which was an alliance of community, faith, and labor promoting growth strategies, not just growth strategies, but smart growth strategies and economic justice. And you did this through research, through education, and obviously mobilizing the troops on the ground. Obviously, that was the start of a movement there. And then I know when you became president, what was it, 11 years ago, it just kind of swelled from that. Can you speak to that? Because obviously with elections, you're bombarded with commercials. But the ground game, the boots on the ground, that's the big part. And Charlie, pat yourself on the back. You made some major strides there. Can you talk about that and share some of your ideas with our listeners?
Sure. To the point about Georgia Stand Up, you know, I worked with some folks at the National AFL because there was a couple of these groups out in California that they worked around community benefit agreements. And, you know, and when I got thinking about having a community partner or an organization that we can, you know, consider a brother or a sister, I got thinking about the components that you need to build something like that. And in Atlanta, when I was at the Labor Council, I realized that, you know, we're not the most dense union state, right? So
right.
we have to work with our community partners and people that are like-minded. So we have to work with our faith-based ministers. We have to work with organizations like a place called the People's Agenda, which is Dr. Joseph Lowery's organization here in Atlanta. And God bless Dr. Lowery, who was another dear friend of mine and a mentor of mine. He started this organization. So every Tuesday, I would literally be in a meeting with Dr. Lowery, a civil rights icon, one of Dr. King's right-hand men and partners. And so I learned an awful lot about the community, learned an awful lot about the inner city. You know, these are things that I didn't grow up in the inner city, so I didn't know a lot of that. And it was a valuable experience. But anyway, long story short, we started Stand Up. And I don't take a lot of credit for the great work they do, and they do a lot of really good work. But we hired an executive director, a lady named Deborah Scott, and she runs it. I am the board chair, you know, I do take pride in founding the organization. But the great work that they do and the programs that they've done is really the credit to Deborah and her staff. But what they do, they have different components. We have a policy institute where they invite elected officials, community folks, religious folks, labor. We all come in and spend 6 weeks together learning about how things are get done at the city of Atlanta, about politics and, you know, how to get a bill introduced, how to get it passed. So there's they're really, and now I think there's been over 300 people now that have gone through that policy institute, and they did tremendous work on this last election cycle. They did over 1 million phone calls in the Senate races just to get people out to vote. They're a nonprofit. I mean nonpartisan. They educate people on the issues, and then they encourage them to come out and vote. So it's a great organization, and it's done very well. We're proud to have them as a partner with the labor movement.
Sounds good, and obviously you were pushing the needle in the right direction on that. Charlie, I got to take a quick break. Charlie Fleming joining us on our live line right now. He is president of the Georgia State AFL-CIO. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Charlie Fleming. Charlie is president of the Georgia State AFL-CIO. He's been in that position since October of 2011. Lifelong member of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and he is a fighter, especially in a state of Georgia. You need to have a good fighter there. Charlie, I want to talk about these voter suppression bills. I mean, we're seeing them in, my gosh, over 20 states. Georgia is no exception. You got a fireball down there by the name of Stacey Abrams, and whatever you can do, I would love to have her on the show. Maybe we could talk off the air here and get her on, because she is a game changer. I know when she lost the election in 2018, what did she do? She signed up, what was it, like 800,000 voters or something like that? Wasn't that the figure, Charlie?
Yeah, that's about right. It was a tremendous effort. She had been working on that for a few years, but and to this day, they have an organization called Fair Fight that is out there every day registering Georgians to vote. And she's the real deal. We in the labor movement love Stacey Abrams. She, when I first became president of the state Fed, she had just become the minority leader in Georgia House. And we got together along with our Secretary of Treasury, Yvonne Brooks, and we sat down and talked about what it would take to change Georgia. And the lady has a plan and had a plan, and we've helped her work that plan. And as I said earlier in the show, we have been winning every year, not enough to completely take over the state house or Senate yet. But it did get to the point where obviously we won Biden, Georgia for Biden, and we won those two Senate races. And that is because of the work that's been going on for the last decade, and she deserves an awful lot of credit with that. But she's wanting to change Georgia from the number one state for business to the number one state for workers and for people to live and earn a livable wage and do all the things that we care about in the labor movement. She's a big proponent of project labor agreements and our apprentice programs. She's a big proponent about livable wages. And the number one issue in Georgia probably is the expansion of Medicaid and Medicare. And she has been hammering the president and governor to do that. And he refuses, even though it's basically funded free by the federal government.
Yeah, there's a lot of states in that category. You get free money from the federal government, but they don't want it. And it's going to help so many people. It'll help them out of poverty. I'm looking up at Stacey's endorsements along with the Georgia AFL-CIO. I see the CWA, a couple locals there, IBEW, AFSCME, food and commercial workers, the painters and allied trade, service employees. I mean, she's got quite an impressive lineup of unions behind her. Let me ask you, where are we right now when it comes to polling, and even beyond that, even her race and also the Senate races? Charlie, can you fill us in?
Yeah, well, we haven't done a lot of polling yet. We feel like it's a little too early. At least the state Fed hasn't. There has been some polling done. I think right now she is like 2, 3, 4 points down to Governor Kemp. And it's basically those same polls say basically the same thing in the Senate race, where Reverend Warnock, Senator Warnock, is down to Herschel Walker, which is an interesting subject in its own right as a senator. It's way too early to get excited about that. Right now, the Republicans are beating up each other. You know, you got the Trumpers, and then you got the old establishment, the Kemp folks. And it's pretty amazing. In the governor's race, you got Sonny Perdue, the former governor of Georgia's cousin, David Perdue, who Warnock beat for the Senate race, now running against Kemp, the incumbent Republican governor here, and Kemp just named Sonny Perdue the head of the school system, the university system here in Georgia. So they gave his, the former governor a $500,000 a year job with heading up for the university system, which he's never worked in, which ironically, but yeah, his cousin is running against him. So it's pretty crazy. It really is. And, it's starting to get pretty ugly. They're going after each other pretty hard. And so, you know, the primary is in May. So we'll see what happens. Stacey doesn't have opposition. So she's doing right now, she's been doing a tour around into the rural areas of the state and talking to people and plans to continue to talk to people. But as we were talking earlier, Ed, I honestly believe if we turn out the vote, we've got the numbers and we will win. The key is getting the vote to come out.
Well, let's talk about that. We got a couple of minutes left here, Charlie. Charlie Fleming, president of the Georgia AFL-CIO, joining us on our live line. I know they really tightened the screws on voting. My question is, how tight? I mean, are you worried about the election? And I'm not talking about the primary. I'm talking later in the year, in November. How do you feel about it, Charlie?
Well, I feel good. I feel that we are going to win. I don't expect it to be easy. I expect it to be razor thin, just like the last cycle. And to your point, after we won those races 2 years ago, the Republicans passed a Jim Crow bill, Senate Bill 202, and it suppresses eligible voters. It limited the number of ballot drop boxes that everybody really loved, adds unnecessary ID requirements, and it even makes it a crime to pass out water or food for those that are waiting in line at the polls. And you wonder, why would they make that a crime? Well, obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, but it is obvious here. In the African-American communities and the poor communities, you're only going to have X amount of machines, and the lines end up being long, and people have to, in order to vote, have to stand in line for 3-4 hours to cast their ballot. So there's nonprofits that now come out, and Stand Up was one of them, that would give you water, crackers, or something to eat while you stood there. Well, now they made that against the law and actually made it a crime to do that. They just passed a bill this year in the session. We close our session on Monday. But they just passed a bill this year. They're going to put a state patrolman or a police officer at every polling place trying to intimidate people. It's just unbelievable to the lengths that these guys will go. A couple other quick points on voter suppression. These guys are so nervous. The Republicans are so nervous. They have taken away the powers of the state school superintendent. They have taken away the powers of the Secretary of State because, you know, remember, Trump was against him and gave him all kinds of, you know, business because he wouldn't overturn the election. He did his job. So that now they have taken away most of his powers, and they've got a bill in the session again that we're worried about that will take away the power of the labor commissioner. They are nervous that they're going to get beat, and they want to hold on whatever power they can hold on to.
Unbelievable. Charlie, thanks for calling attention to all these issues. Let's stay in touch with you on them. It's a long way to November. Charlie Fleming, president of the Georgia State AFL-CIO. Website, GeorgiaUnions.org, GeorgiaUnions.org. They're also on Facebook as well as Twitter. Stay strong, my brother, and please stay in touch, okay?
Well, again, thanks so much for having me, and really enjoyed it, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, Dorsey Hager of the Central Ohio Building Trades and the number two man of the AFL-CIO. It's our first Friday with Fred. That would be Fred Redmond. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.